afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Happy Easter, the day that eats like a week, right? Or the week that eats like a day. What is it? The soup that eats like a meal. We at least know that. That's Campbell's Chunky Soup. We got that down. But Easter is a season, not a day. We're in the Easter season, and happy Easter. That does not mean, necessarily, that we should eat peeps from sunup to sundown. But if you're like my four-year-old, I caught him this morning, down just firing on some jelly beans, first thing. But, of course, I was too, right? So I really can't fault him for that. That's, yeah, kind of the way it works. I want to talk about this North Korean thing. Mike Pence there on the border of North Korea, what that means ultimately in all of this. This tragedy of the Facebook Live homicide. My goodness, what are we coming to in this world? And apparently Gen Xers, most of us are depressed. That seems to be what's out there because we have no fulfillment in our lives, apparently. And it's causing some major issues like this situation with the Facebook, just an example, but the suicide rate is astronomical. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, almost hour, more in a moment, back after this. We're back in Leo Brown, Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, Catholic things. We do that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Mike Pence standing on the border of North Korea in South Korea. And in a bizarre sort of comparison, I realize it's not fair to make this comparison, but I'm going to do it because it kind of is what it is. Ignoring the security detail, as Pope Francis would. But in a completely different way, of course, because what Pope Francis does when he ignores the security detail, he goes out and he wants to embrace others and touch people and bless them and love them and show them his humility and his willingness to go to them and reach out to them. Pence was, I'm going to go up there and get in the face of North Korea. That's what he did. He made sure that they saw him looking big and bad and bold, Vice President, I'm here to threaten you. And the North Korean guards were, North Korean soldiers were taking photos of this. And it's interesting if you look around online, you'll see the evidence of this. It's... oh, jeez. Yeah, this is the most theatrical, the absolute most theatrical of any presidency I've seen, even more so. And granted, I was young at the time, but I paid attention. I really did. I paid attention to this stuff as a kid, even more so than the Reagan administration, which, I mean, here's an actor, right? Reagan was an actor. You'd think if anybody was going to be theatrical, it'd be that guy. But the reality TV world that is the Trump presidency, this is what you get. So I don't even know, like, I don't even know to believe that Pence, oh, he ignored the security detail and didn't stay where he was supposed to. And when I don't know. That's how cynical I am. I hate that. I hate that I'm that cynical. But what we're dealing with, regardless, who cares whether it was staged or whether it was real or whatever, it happened. It happened, no doubt. And what is happening now? The mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, the Tomahawk missiles into Syria, the I'm going to be big and bad and vice presidential and stand up here on the border of North Korea. All of this is to do exactly what Trump promised he would do, what the majority of electoral votes got him in the presidency to do, and that's to flex the heck out of the American muscle. That's what it is. That's what this boils down to. What did he say? We're going to make America great again. Not great economically, not great socially, not great humanitarianly, if that's a word, but great politically and militarily. That's what many think makes greatness. You get great by being as badass as you can, right? That's what it comes down to. When you've got that kind of intimidation factor, when you're able to flex your muscle, there you go. You're great. Now we contrast that to what I mentioned a moment ago with Pope Francis. This is not. It is not the message of Easter. It is not the message of Jesus. It is not the image of Christianity. I'm sorry, it's not. And I know that there are plenty of Christian supporters of Trump who are like, yeah, go. We got to go out there and, you know, be the salt in the wound, I've heard before, because that's kind of, you know, we got to go out there and rub salt in the wounds. That's how we do it. Salt and salt of the earth. That's what it's about. No, it's not. I'm sorry, it is not. Believe that if you will. Go on and pump up the iron and be all Christian flexed, but that's not what Jesus showed. That is not meekness. Meekness says, yeah, I could kick the heck out of everything. I could, with a flick of my finger, destroy all of this, but I choose instead to sacrifice. That's a completely different dynamic than what we're seeing in this political it's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy and several just popped into my head, but it's almost like the muscle shows, right? The bodybuilding shows. These guys, the bodybuilders, aren't necessarily powerlifters. Do you see the difference? Have you ever seen the difference between a bodybuilder and a powerlifter? Powerlifters are chunky and generally not cut at all. They're just huge. They go out there and they throw these weights around, and they're not there with all their sveltness, cutness, and showing off their muscles. Right? They got the power, but to look at them, they just kind of look. Some of them just look out of shape. You're like, this guy is. What's up with that guy? Right? They got guts. They've got. I mean, really, have you seen this? Powerlifters, people who are true powerlifters. They're not bodybuilders. All they're interested in is lifting the most weight they possibly can. Clean and jerk, right? That's what it's called. They get it up there, get it over their head. They've power lifted it. Then you've got the class of bodybuilders right? who have, they're not about, they don't lift heavy weights. They don't. What they do is work muscles until they're crafted. This is how they bodybuild. They're not necessarily interested in clean and jerking 300 pounds, but they'll lift a particular type of a weight, a certain way to craft certain muscles. It's what they do. And then they're very strategic about dieting, and very, especially when it comes to competition, they're going to slim down. They're going to drop body weight and water weight and all of this. They're going to get super, super cut. They're going to go out there and shave and oil up and tan, right? And they're going to show off their muscles. And that's what it's about. But it's not about the substance of what does this really mean. It's what I've said before. It's what I've said a zillion times. If we want to be great because in our greatness, we are there to help others, if that's what we're going to do, we're going to say, you know what? Because it's, I've said this a zillion times. You've heard me say it. I'll say it again. People love to say, but Leo, we got to put our oxygen mask on first so we can help others. Okay, right? But that's not what you're doing. You're throwing your oxygen mask on, finding the only parachute and jumping off the plane before it crashes. That's not greatness. I'm sorry. That's cowardice. That's what that is. That's cowardice. Greatness says, no, we go down together, or we find a way to all get out of this together. That's greatness. But we've somehow got this confused that we think the show, we think the oil and tan and exfoliation is somehow the way to do this. And we're dazzled by this. And we think that this is obviously real, when the real doesn't look like that at all. The real isn't necessarily, yeah, I mean, it's impressive when somebody can power lift, but to see them without a weight thrust over their head, they don't look like the guy who could do that. And there's something amazing about being able to do something, but not, right? Yeah, we could. We could do whatever we want. But you know what? We got the restraint. We got the respect. We've got the grace not to do it. That's the counterintuitive ethic of Christianity that really makes Easter what it is. And if we live that way, if we live in the way of knowing confidently, yes, we could have anything, do anything, be anything, whatever, but we choose a different path because we want to make life better for others. Yeah, you can have a good life. So what Zig Ziglar said, you know what, here's how you get anything in this world. Help others get what they want. Help them get what they want. You got everything. You just won. Or how about desire a whole heck of a lot less? You ever think about that? Do you really need to desire the things that you desire? Do you really need to have the things that you think will fulfill that won't? Because I assure you, they won't fulfill. You may think they will, but if you're not fulfilled now, if you can't find contentment in what you have, you'll never find contentment. And this is a challenge that I've dealt with forever with people, just, and I'm dealing with it now as a parent. To say, look, you got to learn contentment. You've got to accept it. You just simply got to say, okay, this is good. What I got is good. And somehow embrace that and realize that you don't have to flex your muscles if you're truly living in a way that says this is about others, right? This isn't about me. This is an opportunity. That's what this journey is. It's an opportunity to journey together, to walk together. I posted on my Facebook page. I need to put it over on the Breadbox Media page as well. Great reflection from a Jewish guy who just at that point in his life, young guy, I think in his 30s when he did this, decided to go and do the Way of St. James, right? Compostela, whatever I'm saying, St. James. We've talked about the way before. And on his journey, discovered what it really means to be Christian. And through that experience of seeing that in action, converted to Catholicism because he was like, this is where that source comes from. I get it now. That's how this is supposed to work, not the other way around. More to come. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this. Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Apparently, it turns out that we're all depressed. Talking about the study last week that says Facebook usage can lead to depression. Now they're saying that the biggest group out there with real issues seems to be this Gen X generation, right? Those who are approaching and or middle age now. Boomers beyond us, Gen Xers in this, what, 30, is it? No, 40, where are we? 45, so it is? 45 to 65, are we in that range? 45 to, I don't know. Middle-aged Americans apparently are the most disillusioned individuals. because we're kind of at this point where, you know, and here's the thing. It's the best of times, it's the worst of times, right? Charles Dickens, timeless, immortal reflection. This is what we all think. We think there's never been a time like this. And in an essence, that's true, because this moment, that moment, the one that just went, the one that what it's now, what it's never been here before. This is true. But there's something about understanding the timelessness, understanding that this quote unquote human condition is not new. There's something about that that can then, if we embrace this understanding, provide some degree of something, I think, for those who are willing to do it. I heard Father Richard Rohr interviewed over the weekend on the NPR show On Being. I didn't hear the full interview. I just heard that he was there, and I want to check out the podcast of it. But, you know, this is something that Father Rohr, as a Franciscan, has been really trying to connect to the understanding of Catholic spirituality and really Christian spirituality. This is his whole focus of saying, look, can we somehow embrace that which is transcendent? And really not even embrace it. That sounds almost too active compared to his world of contemplative living. And it's really not just contemplative prayer. It's not this time of, you know, we're going to find our moment or our hour a week or our, you know, time before or after Mass or whatever, where we're just going to focus in prayer. It truly is an understanding of living. I'm going to live in this mindset. I'm going to live in this heart set. I'm going to live in this world of reality, as opposed to all of the stuff that's around me that is really just perception, right? What's real? What's truly transcendent? What's truly connective? And I think that, you know, when you're rat racing and you're here and there and you're stressed because, oh, I don't have retirement, or there's that guy on Facebook who's showing all of his vacation videos and photos, and he and his family are always around the world in various places. I say that because I was looking at Facebook last night, just happened to see a high school friend who's doing exactly that, and good for him, right? Good for him and his family. But we see this stuff, and rather than it depressing us, first, I celebrate that. I literally do. I'm like, you go. I've traveled the world. I love it to see people out there, because I know it's going to change you. If you are out there as a globetrotter, you're going to come back changed as a result of that. That's great. I applaud that. Literally, I do. But at the same time, there are those who look at Facebook and it depresses them, because they think, this isn't me. This isn't my life. This isn't my world. I'll never be there. I'll never be that. And if that's what we're doing and it is depressing us, then that's a problem. But regardless of what we perceive, until we understand reality and until we get into this world of saying, okay, as Father Rohr talks about this cosmic dance, right? This Father, Son, Holy Spirit, this understanding of there's this mutual self-giving love that transcends anything and everything. And we can be a part of that. We can allow ourselves to be swept up in that. The first book I read of his was called Breathing Underwater, which basically, it's not a way to get out of the stressful situation as much as just to allow it, just to learn to breathe in it, right? Learn to breathe in it. Because what we do, and I know this, I mean, my goodness, I've had a company in startup for a year and a half now. It's stressful at times when there's no money in the bank and we're trying to keep things going and electricity gets turned off at home. Well, these things have happened. And I know that gripping, like, I can't breathe now. But there's something about realizing this is part of this process. And being part of this process, being being through the tough stuff allows you to appreciate the mountaintop. If you're born on a mountaintop and you lived on the mountaintop, or if you just got flown up there, you didn't climb up there. I mean, there's something about the process. It's why people go to Nepal and climb Mount Everest. They do it because it's a process of getting there. It's not so much about being there as much as it is getting there. And people, I guess, easily find success maybe in other things. Like, oh, now I got to go climb Mount Everest, whatever it is. We can do that with anything. We can understand the process. This is what it's about. And I mentioned a moment ago this, I don't know what I called it, the Camino, Compostela, is that what it is? The Way of St. James is what we generally know it as, the mostly through Spain, but in what I think it encompasses a few different countries in Europe where pilgrimages after pilgrimages after pilgrimage are made, and people go there and truly discover something about themselves. And I posted this on my Facebook page, this gentleman whose name escapes me right now, but born and raised a Jewish guy. He says he was kind of the equivalent of a Christmas Easter Catholic as a Jew. Really kind of not connected into his faith life, but kind of just realized it was something that was there that he did, but then decides to take this journey and does this pilgrimage and discovers while he's there what Mass is about. And he said, you know, he totally got the Seder concept of the Passover connection, and all of it made sense, and it was reflective of his faith experience, but it wasn't that that hooked him. It was seeing the people doing the stuff, right? It was seeing the people being Christian to one another. It was knowing that there was something about this experience that was truly transcendent, because there people could truly help each other when, and it goes back home to Denver, and there's homeless people living under a bridge that nobody cares about. When no one would let anybody even limp by themselves on this journey. So why do we allow limping? Why do we think that there's some sort of survival of the fittest when this should be reflective of our life journey? So many of us find ourselves unfulfilled because we're not looking at the opportunities of saying, how am I supposed to help out? What am I supposed to do? What has my particular journey, what has it brought from a standpoint of resourcefulness, what resourcefulness has my journey given me that I can now use to help others on their journey? I posted this last week, and I'm like, my goodness, I got to read The Grapes of Wrath again, because I don't remember this. Maybe I didn't read it in the first place, but it was assigned to me in high school, I recall. I had to do a book report. I'm sure you read the Cliff Notes and really didn't even know what the heck it was about. But this character who ends up with her baby being born, stillborn, but is lactating as an expectant mother, ends up feeding a dying man from her breast. I mean, now, what an analogy, right? What a metaphor. That's what Steinbeck was obviously trying to teach in this writing, and that's just lost on us. It's lost. It's totally lost this day and age. That our journey, our experience is designed to be resourcefulness for those around us. Isn't that amazing? Looking for the key? Looking for the key. You looking for the key? Are you looking for the key? Because here it is. There's what it is. Plain and simple. We're supposed to be here for each other. That's why we're here. That's why there's a Trinitarian understanding of it's not just God. not just Jesus, not just the Holy Spirit. It's three in one. Why? Because there's something about this communal understanding of oneness that allows us when we go, oh, here's somebody on the journey. I know this journey and maybe I can help them. Right? That's how this works. That's what this is supposed to be about. We just get it wrong. We get it wrong. We get depressed. We get depressed. We do stupid things. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. Stick around. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Talking about getting crazy, doing crazy things, and you know, what happens in our worlds when things begin to collide and we think that, I don't know, we don't have any purpose, we don't have any direction, we have been abandoned, we have unrequited love, you name it. All of these things that can compound to the point of then breaking and, you know, in some cases, it's suicide. That happens. In some cases, it's just getting lost in some sort of addiction. Some cases, it's relationship, infidelities, whatever. And in then extreme cases, we see what happened with this Cleveland situation on Easter morning yesterday, where a gentleman apparently in some sort of estrangement decides to randomly murder a victim and post this on social media to dig even more deeply at his girlfriend, lover, whomever, whatever. And the tragedy on so many levels, that is what this is. But again, the symptom is all we're seeing. We're not seeing the real issue. We're not seeing the real problem. We're not seeing that which could potentially be a solution. We're just looking at this from the surface. And it's tragic. It's horrifically tragic. 74-year-old gentleman out saying goodbye to his family goes and is collecting aluminum cans in the neighborhood, which he does. And the guy approaches him, gets him to say Joy Lane, which is the name of this woman, and then murders him. Crazy. Just crazy where we are this day and age. And yes, back to it's the best of times, it's the worst of times, because these things are happening at a much more alarming rate. Not that they haven't always, it's just now it gets way more publicity than ever before. But, and of ironies, right? The name Joy Lane. It's beyond tragic. I was talking about Father Richard Rohr, and I get his daily newsletter, daily email blast, whatever it is, talking about the Beatitudes right now and this blessed are those who mourn. And we don't mourn well. You think about it. We don't mourn well. And as the writer in this particular posting suggests, that there's something about becoming liquid, that it's through the melting of the ice that then this can flow into different areas and fill in different areas. And she refers to the gift of tears that can come in sadness, that there is something physically important about crying. There's something that allows us to heal through this time of cheerfulness. And there are times we want to comfort people and say, oh, don't cry. No, cry. Cry the heck out. Cry it out. Get it out of you. And don't hold that in. But we have these, I don't know. I don't even know where we got these notions that we're not supposed to cry. You know, the classic temptations, ain't too proud to beg. They say a crying man is half a man. Really? Who says that? It's a great song. Love the song. Love the Stones, Rolling Stones version of it. It's an amazing song on so many levels. But that's a bad message. It's no, anyone who cries is crying in tears of healing. Jesus, the night he was betrayed, before he was going to face the cross, we just came through Holy Week, and we should know this well. In the Garden of Gethsemane, in his distress, wept bitterly. Cried profusely, we understand. And so distraught that he was sweating blood. I mean, this is real deal experience that takes us to another level. Yeah, I've had times where I was literally blessed with what is known as the gift of tears and prayer, where I cried uncontrollably for hours. And it was a time of healing. It truly was. We don't allow ourselves to be healed. We don't know what that is. We don't get it. And then this aggression that results from not allowing the pain just to wash through us, the resulting aggression turns us into monsters, turns us into murdering machines of insanity, rather than realizing that what we might just need to do is sit down and cry. We might need to do is just spend a couple of days isolated, trying to sort this stuff out in time of true contemplation and allowing the realities of what the broken relationship or the unrequited love or the pain of rejection to grow us into something different. Not to make us bitter. I'm back to Zig Ziglar, second time in the show. Not bitter, but better. And that's platitudinal sort of stuff. Easy to say, I get, not always easy to do, but we got to start somewhere. We got to at least start saying it. We got to start there. And by expressing this, maybe get to the point where we can say, okay, there's something here now. There's something here that has come of this experience. Because otherwise, we may just, and it's going to manifest in so many different ways, but it's going to be internalized. And that's not what contemplation is, right? I think we think that contemplative prayer is this thing of internalism. No, it's external. It's incredibly external because it's universal, cosmic, as it's called in some cases. That we're connecting our experience with a much bigger experience. Because there is a degree, not a degree, there's a systematic interconnectedness. That when it works well, it can interconnect beautifully. Now, so here's a guy who decided to go in and murder a guy, and apparently has claimed to do others. That's unconfirmed, apparently, at this point. Randomly choosing victims, when instead he could have said, you know what, this sucks, this is the worst, but I'm going to heal through helping. I'm going to find a way to take this pain and turn it into something productive. Because there's got to be others who have felt this kind of pain as well. Maybe I can do something. Then, of course, we had the report last week. The guy walking into the elementary school, murdering his wife. Killing a student, I think inadvertently, but still doing that. And then shooting himself. There's a lot of pain. We know that. It's a whole heck of a lot of pain. But pain can propel us. It can move us towards something. It can allow us to heal. We got to make that choice, and we got to say, we're going to allow this to be what it's supposed to be. Not to be what we've created it to be or something that we've decided it has to be because we're just reactionary. Kind of where we started the show with this concept of muscle flexing and kind of showing our strength. We don't have to show our strength. We don't have to show how strong we are. Nobody said, in order to survive in this world, you got to show how strong you are. No, you don't. No, you don't. The very message of Easter begins with the crucifixion. Yes, it's resurrection, but it begins with the crucifixion. And what is that? It is a show of weakness. It's a show of humility. It's a show of submission and a show of complete and total abandonment to whatever God has in store. It's a show of, I don't have the answers. It's a show of, I have no power to do anything. It's a show of, this is completely out of my control. But in doing that, that's when amazing things happen. That's when resurrection comes. Not from attempting to conquer it, not from attempting to combat it. It's embracing it. It's breathing underwater. It's saying, I'm going to take this for what it is, even if it kills me. Because resurrection awaits. Happy Easter. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.